Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, July 13th, 2026. My name is Magnus Tiefold. Joining me today in the studio is
Peter R.H.
And we've got a bunch of stuff lined up for you today. We're going to start in a couple of moments with a report from Danny Nesvadarani about death cafes. It's a program to help people deal with their grief, and Danny digs right into it with an interview with one of the organizers. That's coming up in a couple of minutes. Later in the program, we have Gardening with Embark, and we're going to be checking in with the Embark's gardening cohorts. That's a program where you can, students particularly, can join a cohort of fellow budding gardeners and get an intensive introduction to gardening and the things you need to know to be successful. So we're going to talk to some of those folks. Peter, what are you going to be talking about later on?
Well, I'm going to make comment on a show we have on the station, the Canadian Philosophy Show, that comes from the Nanaimo student or university station. Yep. We actually have one person here at SFU, I think he's a master's student.
Yeah.
He's involved with the show too. So I'm going to. They talked about John Lennon, and I have a few things to kind of add to what they said on Thursday.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So we'll talk about John Lennon a little later in the show. In the news in New Westminster, 150 people are out of their homes. Looking like for good after a major three-alarm fire in that community on Saturday that has, like I say, I've seen photos of it and nearly destroyed the building completely. Clearly, they're going to have to start all over, which means an entirely new building, and those folks are...
When did the fire happen?
Well, I think on Saturday.
Oh, really? I heard about some other fire maybe a month ago in New Westminster, but anyway.
Yeah, this was a pretty big one, really rough for the folks there, because as I say, the building looks like it's going to have to be demolished, and that means they're going to completely start over with a brand new building, and who knows what that development ends up being like, because... You know, is it going to be, are they going to build a new rental building in which the folks can move back into, or is it going to be a condo, a completely different kind of development? That can be really tough, you know. You start your weekend thinking, you know, looking forward to the weekend and having a good time, and suddenly by Saturday night, it's like you don't even know where you're going
to
live.
Is this on Columbia or close to 6th Street and 6th Avenue?
It's near that area. It's on... Something like, yeah, I can get the exact location.
Okay, no, I wondered if it was off the beaten path a little bit, or whether it's any kind of things that a person like me would be, like 6th and 6th, and then there's Columbia, where they had the two SkyTrain stations. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, apparently it's so much smoke you could see it from just about all around Vancouver. So, yeah, really bad for those folks, for them. Donald Trump has said that he's going to start charging a toll for getting people through the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, well, we're finally going to get that bridge, the Gordie Howe Bridge.
Oh, yeah, that one too.
And that there's going to be some sort of stipulations about that we have to go through.
Yeah.
But... So, anyway, it's just he wants to grab as much power as he can,
and of course, the U.S. and Iran are back to shooting at each other in their war. And as I say, Donald Trump is and you never know with Donald Trump. I mean, he just may be, you know, been in a peak of, well, he tends to shoot off his mouth when he's frustrated or angry or embarrassed or whatever. But that war there does not seem to have any sign of ending soon, or that the we can count on the Strait of Hormuz opening up again soon for real. It hasn't really properly opened up even since the ceasefire of a few weeks back. And while we have seen gas prices here in our local area coming down, down to anywhere from 190 down to the mid 70s, $1.90 to down to mid $1.70 or so, 75. I don't know if they're going to go back up again. So that's something to look forward to. And well, I don't think you're a driver.
I'm 63 and never learned how to drive. So I don't think it's going to happen. They're going to
Well, you know, you've probably saved an awful lot of money over the course of your lifetime not owning a car and buying gas.
Yeah.
Because it's an expensive proposition and more expensive when gas is expensive. But unfortunately, it's not just affecting drivers. Of course, oil prices and fuel prices, because they drive the whole transportation industry in which all the goods we and food and whatnot we use is moved around, leads to increases in prices there. So I have to say, it's probably one of the biggest foreign policy blunders we've seen out of the United States in a long time. I mean, not necessarily in its total impact, because obviously there has been bigger wars and bigger messes, but in the sense of being something that was, in my opinion, entirely predictable and completely avoidable. And, you know, the goal of limiting Iran's impact in nuclear program seemed to be already handled by the agreement they'd worked out with between the U.S. and Iran over a decade ago, which Donald Trump abandoned.
Well, the other thing, I think he thought it was very simple. He could be a big hero. They could have human rights in Iran by having it's actually the religious leader. And actually, it's kind of like King assassinating King Chucky or King Charles the Zero, as I call him, or the Third. He's just a figurehead as such. And in many ways, there is in Iran, despite them calling himself the ultimate ruler, I think they mean that in a religious sense. There's a backup of a bureaucracy, a government that runs regardless. And him doing that meant nothing. But he is kind of stupid. He was born rich, and that's how he got to go as far as he did.
And I also think this administration in particular, you know, whether it's Trump or the sort of macho tough guy talk of Hegseth at the Department of Defense, or the Department of War, as they like to call it, they really have a feeling. I think they overestimate what you can accomplish with hard power, which is to say with the military and bombs and being aggressive, and clearly have also underestimated the usefulness of soft power, you know, which is shown by their dismantling of U.S. aid and foreign aid programs in the United States that the United States has had. And just, you know, the soft power of being, you know, friendly to your friends, and, you know, which is also something that the United States seems to have abandoned, endlessly attacking and insulting its supposed allies, including Canada.
Well, when Musk, he doesn't have that position anymore, wherever it was at one time.
No.
And that's what they started. They said, oh, we're going to cut foreign aid and all this. I mean, but they just, whatever. It's kind of, it's just totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
Across the board, everything is just bad.
All right. Well, we're going to get on with the program here. This is a report from Danny Nesvadarani about death cafes happening in and around Vancouver. And it's a program that helps people deal with grief and their own, you know, their own mortality as well. Here's Danny's report.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Death is an inevitable part of all life, but also something that not many people feel comfortable discussing. That's understandable. It's something that we can never truly know, and that's a scary concept to contend with. However, that doesn't mean it shouldn't be talked about, and for many, talking more about death can be something that is healing. That is what certain gathering events, dubbed death cafes, are trying to show. The Death Cafe, as it's structured today, has been around for over a decade, originally hosted by a man named John Underwood in the UK. Since then, variations of the Death Cafe have been hosted all over the world, including right here in Vancouver. Recently, CJSF was made aware of a Death Cafe series being hosted twice a month at different venues around East Vancouver. We wanted to learn more and got in touch with the lead organizer, Ava Quissey. Ava Quissey is a recent SFU graduate of political science and someone who, after speaking with her, clearly loves talking about death. During our conversation, we spoke with Quissey about why she started these death cafes, some of the conversations it's created, and how talking about death doesn't have to be so scary. Please take a listen.
My name's Ava. I'm actually also an SFU graduate. But I host Death Cafes in Vancouver, which I've been hosting for about a year now, on and off. And something I'm really passionate about, really interested in conversations around death and grief and community building. So, yeah, happy to be here.
What made you start organizing these events in the first place?
Yeah, so I actually took a class at SFU, HUM3, oh man, what's the course code? Okay, I forget, but by Jason Brown, and he taught this class called Death, Disease, and Disaster, something like that. And it was all about like culture's response to tragedy, death being one of those things, like thinking about how cultures understand death and such. And that just like ignited all these themes in my life that I had kind of been suppressing for a long time about anxiety around death and conversations of grief and change and such. So through taking that class, I came across death cafes, which I ended up doing as a final project in that class, and just read about it. And I was like, this seems amazing. So I did a death cafe with a small group of friends, like six people in my friend's house. And it was just super, super moving and just a really beautiful experience. And I was like, everyone must experience this. So then a little while later, I started doing them publicly. And now I do them for anybody and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts are you doing them? Is it, from what I saw online, it looked like you kind of switch venues?
Yeah. Yeah, I've done a few different venues, which has been interesting because depending on the venue, like you can obviously get different people, and it's been interesting to see how it's changed as I've facilitated in different spaces and tried different things. But I've done the Slice of Life at East Cafe, at Secret Lantern Society, all based in East Vancouver, and then in the future I'm hoping to do some outside and do some cool like collaborative events. So especially as the weather gets warmer, to like be in an outside space and have these discussions. But yeah.
And what are these discussions? You know, when I saw the premise of a death cafe, is it sort of tailored towards people who have experienced death and are going through a grieving process, or people just wanting to talk about the concept of death in general? How does that work?
Yeah, so the Death Cafe, there is like an actual format, kind of like quote unquote, comes out of England, like 2011. This guy John Underwood, he started this official thing called Death Cafe, which is a place for people to come together and talk about anything related to death and grief. But it has some guidelines in its traditional format of, like, there's no prompts. It's group-led discussion. It's not bereavement counseling. Like, it's a safe space for people to come together and, like, enjoy snacks and connect and just, like, talk about the philosophical and interests or experiences, whatever. But yeah, I mean, every Death Cafe is different, and it morphs to the needs of the community. And definitely, as people host Death Cafes in Vancouver, and I've seen different Death Cafes happen, people play with, you know, those rules. So I definitely have used prompts before and such. But it's really, like, it's for anybody, it's for anything. Yeah, like, I feel like people typically come and talk about experiences with loss. It is typically more oriented towards like a grief sharing kind of style event, but I definitely have people that come in and are just want to talk about funeral planning, especially if they're, like, a bit older in age. People come in talking about pet loss. People come in talking about, yeah, like, theoretical interests or religion. Like, there's so many different things. So, you know, as long as the space is safe and respectful for anybody, then it really can just be anything. Yeah.
Do you think death isn't talked about enough? Do you think that just, you know, I mean, obviously you host these death cafes, but just on a societal level, it does feel in a lot of ways like a taboo topic, something that provides a lot of discomfort for people. And is that part of what these death cafes are trying to quell or combat?
Yeah, that's definitely where this comes out of, right? The Death Cafe is a response to particularly, like, the global North or North American culture having a very sanitized relationship with death, medicalized relationship with death, and how we've been so separated from traditions and, experiences with death culturally. So, and loss, I think, like, just being, I don't know, intimately acknowledging how present loss is in our lives and all the different ways that we experience loss. So the Death Cafe definitely comes as a response to that need and that lack. I definitely don't think it's talked about enough. I mean, my whole basis for being interested in this was feeling such anxiety around it when I was a child. And especially as we live in an increasingly like secular and globalized world, especially in North America, which is this crazy combination of traditions and, you know, a new culture and, yeah, navigating all of this. I think a lot of people feel like maybe a little bit lost in the dark in some of these discussions, and especially from the discussions that happen in these events, I think a lot of people feel really alone in their experiences. So I have just, every time there's a Death Cafe, the response is so overwhelming and how connected people feel. And that always just points to how deep the need is. And so, yeah, I think there's always more room to talk about these things for sure. Yeah.
How do you feel like your perspective on death has changed since starting these?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this a little bit in a Death Cafe I had the other day, where sometimes I'll vocalize in the Death Cafe, I'm like, oh, people will think that, you know, because I'm in these spaces, yeah, like, what does it mean to always be in a space where you're kind of thinking about death or talking about death with people, you know? But yeah, I think maybe for a certain time, I almost did it as like a defense mechanism. It's like I had this anxiety and it was like, okay, well, now I know I have to face this anxiety. And maybe by facing it, you know, I can overcome it. But it's not about overcoming it. Like, I think I've really had to come to terms with the fact that, like, I'll always be scared. I'll always have fear, and there's always an unknown, and I can't do anything about that. And that is kind of the essence of the relationship. It's accepting the unknown, and it's accepting that I can't control these things and making peace with that in my human experience. And so I feel like that's kind of been one of the bigger lessons of just, like, I have to face this, and that doesn't mean that I'm more prepared for it. It just means that I'm, like, facing it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I think it's not something that, like, death isn't something you experience and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm better now. Like,
yeah.
I've healed. It's like, totally. It's an ongoing process. And it's just, these spaces are sort of meant to, like, commiserate and come to terms with that process rather than, like, quote unquote overcoming it.
Totally. And it's interesting to see people talk about grief. Like, often people will use like kind of like fighting words. It's like to fight my grief, you know, to like overcome my grief. And I don't know, you know, like everyone has their own way of making peace, but I think it is about making peace, you know, like our grief becomes a part of us and it's morphs and it changes. And how do we incorporate that into our lives in a real way rather than like pushing it away? It's interesting to see the language that people use around it. How can you prepare yourself for the death of your friends and family? You know, I don't know that it's about being prepared or it's about being ready. You know, these things are supposed to be devastating. Like, that is the importance of them, you know, like that's the way it is. But recognizing that devastation in community is so, so, so important. And so, yeah.
What is the mood like at these events? That was something I was curious about, because the way you talk about it, it feels so, I guess for lack of a better term, positive. Mm-hmm. But you sound very positive when you speak about it. And I'd imagine that these can be kind of heavy at times, mm-hmm. but what is just the overall mood and tone of these death cafes, or maybe the tone that you try to convey?
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. I definitely talk about it and I'm like, my friends are like, oh, how did the last death cafe go? And I'm like, oh, it went so well, you know. But it's like, these people are, you know, like we're crying together, and it really reaches such highs and lows in, you know, in positive ways. But it's a full spectrum of emotion, and I always frame it that way going into the space. I always tell people that this is a dynamic space where crying and laughing will happen, and like all of those things are okay. Grief and loss and our feelings about death encompass, like, there's so many different ways that they manifest. So to go into an event where we talk about those things and expect to only be sad is just not even a reflection of what it's like to actually experience those emotions, right? So I mean, it definitely has, obviously, it's very sad, slow, heavy moments. Of course, there's a deep and intense sharing, but there's just such a community that's created. And leaving, I'm just, yeah, I feel like I'm hugging strangers, and it's like there's such a beauty in that heartache. And yeah, it's kind of almost indescribable sometimes. That's how it feels for me, at least. I feel so filled up by it. Sometimes I get kind of anxious before the events, and then when I leave, I'm just always so moved, always. Yeah.
Do you find that it's been sort of the same people reattending, or is it always kind of a new crowd wanting to speak on death?
Yeah, there's definitely people that come back for sure, which is awesome. And it's been interesting. Something I've been passionate about is creating more of an intergenerational space, because a lot of the death cafes that I attended before I started hosting publicly were maybe a bit more themed and a bit more oriented towards people that were thinking about end-of-life planning and such, which is super important, of course, or thinking about funeral planning. But I was really curious, especially just from my own experience, to tap into the thoughts and feelings of people more in my age group. So creating the intergenerational space has been really interesting, and in seeing how those conversations, like what conversations have come up, and then seeing like my friends show up and like not tell me about it, or like people that I've kind of met, and realizing, yeah, that there's such a need. Yeah, it's also, yeah, like I said, you know, different spaces, different people. So I'm always kind of surprised sometimes, and it's gotten to a point where I do have people that I know show up and they're not telling me, and I'm just like, okay, this is nice, this is a good thing. But I'm finding new ways to try and get the message out there to new groups, because it's really a space for everybody. Like, I think everybody can benefit from being there. So
yeah, I mean, the intergenerational aspect seems like a pretty important part, because, you know, I'm assuming we're both in our 20s, mm-hmm. and like when there are older people attending these events, like, it's kind of a fact of life. Like, once you get to a certain age, like, you are going to have experienced death, mm-hmm. At some point, or like the death of loved ones in your life. So like having those people there, providing that kind of perspective for people that are younger and maybe haven't had those experiences yet, or had fewer of those experiences, that feels like a very important part.
Totally. And I think it's like, what does it mean to live the width of your life, but also the depth of it? And we, like, it's so easy to make, you know, relationships with people that are on the same kind of time frame as you, like in your circle. But having
relationships with people that have more life experience and less, you know, younger and older. There is something so, so essential about that. And yeah, I was reading about this like beautiful indigenous perspective about like living your life to become a good elder or a good ancestor. And I talked about this a little bit in my Death Cafe on Wednesday. And I think we've become really alienated from that idea. Like, we get really caught up in like what's happening right now and how do I live, you know, especially in this youth obsessed culture, which definitely bleeds into this fear of death and fear of loss and change and aging, you know. What does it mean to have vibrant, healthy, inspiring relationships with people that are older than you, and to like have that reciprocal inspiration of like life doesn't end yet, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much taboo just around aging. So I think they're all intertwined in my eyes. And yeah, you want to live every moment as fully as possible, and having those relationships and those insights, I think, really plays a big hand in that, for sure.
How can people who want to learn more about the Death Cafes, like when they're hosted, yeah, where, how does that work?
The promo. Yeah. It's a little bit low key right now, but I do post them on Instagram. That's when I host mine. I host, out of various spots in East Vancouver monthly on my own. And then I co-host with a friend out of Playground Studio. Also trying to do that monthly, but so you can check out Playground Studio because we posted it on there. And then I have an Instagram called Looking Out, Looking In, which is where I just post any of my little death related journey stuff. So I always post on there, and then it's also on Eventbrite usually as well. So yeah, keep an eye out.
Once again, that was our conversation with Ava Quissy, host of a Death Cafe series in East Vancouver. This has been Danny Nesvitarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Broken Social Scene is currently out on tour through the United States. In September, they're heading off to Europe. This is Think of You from their recently released album, Remember the Humans.
Have a little more of that click, maybe?
World. I think of you when you try to die. I think of you when the buildings burn down and leave the things you lack. I think of you all the time. I think of you trying to